did.
Just lost you, rock on, rock.
Podcast Rock City.
What's up, everybody? Joe here from Podcast Rock City, and with me this week is Mr. Jody Havnot.
Greetings out there, Kiss Army. How are ya?
You know, hey, listen, I got to tell you guys a quick story before we get started. Jody and I recorded some of the stuff for our premium page on our website, podcastrockcity.com, and I was telling him how my heat wasn't working right. And last night I woke up, I looked over at the little thermostat thing on the wall that was lit up, and I was sleeping in my house, and it was 50 degrees.
Damn. Now,
I know that outside it was 13. So 50 is still warm compared to outside, but damn, I had to turn everything off, and I bought like $150 worth of heaters, and now my house is too damn warm.
What kind did you go with?
I did not do the kind that you were talking about, which was the standard like radiator looking thing.
Yeah.
I've had one before and I couldn't get it to work very well in my house. So I got this one that sucks in the cold air and shoots out hot air.
Cool.
I don't know if it's as good as D-Rock's, but
you don't want anything that hot, dude.
No way. No way.
Over there and your face melts off.
Okay. So this week, you know, Jody and I, there's usually three of us on the show, and it's usually D-Rock or Andrew Kiss, and if we have a guest, they become our third. So this week, I've been talking to Ken Barr. Now, I don't know if you all know who Ken Barr is. I hope you do. You should. Okay? He's a former road crew for Kiss, Alice Cooper, STP. He's written books. He's done movies, and I'm super excited because I am a fan of... Well, in the list of the bands that he has where he was road crew, I'm a fan of all of them. So I'm hoping that not only will we get some Kiss stories, but we'll get some Alice and STP stories. Please welcome distinguished author, movie maker, road crew member, Ken Barr. How you doing, Ken?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me on, guys.
That was your longest intro ever, probably.
That absolutely was. Yeah, I actually kind of got excited to meet me.
Awesome. So listen, we're going to talk about everything that you have going on. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about before we get into all that is we usually do news right about now, and there's not a lot of news right now. You know, Kiss news. They're getting, you know, they're getting ready to go overseas. Blah blah blah. I don't get to see it. No, I'm kidding you guys out there. I'm jealous. But you know, they keep. People are really getting all these little teases about Ace jumping back in the band. What do you think the chances of something like that happening are?
You know, I think that the band that's touring now is a great band and it's a great representation of Kiss, but I think there's equity in the more original members, the better. If Ace has been sober, what, like 8 years now?
Yeah, something like 10.
10. God bless him for it, too. I know what they have, you know, is working, but they're also not, I mean, I've looked at the tour dates. They're playing a lot of medium markets now. You know, they've kind of really been out there working it, and let's face it, bringing Ace back in would elevate things up a bit. I mean, Tommy's great, no disrespect, but like I said, the equity is in the original players. I was actually going to ask you guys about that because one of the DJs on one of the Sirius radio stations, was talking about it as well and actually mentioned that, you know, possibility of Peter as well, even if it was just for one big pay-per-view, one glorious show and out or one and done, or if Peter had enough gas in the tank to go out and do it again, because I think there's always going to be a market for the original four, no matter how good what they have now is.
Right, right. You know, we're happy. You know, it would always be awesome to have the other guys in the band. But you know, I think I speak for Jody. You know, we're pretty happy. You know, we like the band. You know,
oh, absolutely. You know, Tommy and Eric. First off, they're top notch musicians, and they add a little bit of playfulness, especially Eric. And kind of lighten the mood a little bit. You know, when I see Eric up there with his bazooka shooting back at Tommy, it's hilarious.
And oh, yeah.
And Those two keep that band tight. They really do. And you know, Paul and Gene still, you know, can still do it, but you know, they've got those two kicking them in the ass, keeping them, you know, really at their peak of their game. So yeah, I'm happy with it too. But you know, I was happy with the Revenge version of Kiss that I started working for. You know, that was a great time as well. You know, every era has had its merits, but I definitely think there'll always be a market for that one more time, you know, time with the originals. Yes,
definitely.
And I would go. I have to admit, I would go if it was feasible. So, you know, I think it'll always be hanging out there until they finally do it.
Yep, and they'll be over their heads. So you got in with the band and the Revenge era.
Yeah, I had known Eric for a couple years. I had drum teched. Not for him, but when I first met him, I was a drum tech, and we did Alice Cooper a couple tours together. I was a guitar tech, and he had a drum tech. Well, he had lost his drum tech right before the 91 Alice Cooper tour in Europe, so we got just a local to fill in. So Eric didn't have a dedicated guy, and when he got the gig, he and I went out to dinner, and he asked me. I knew the question was going to be asked. You can tell sometimes, and we started talking about it, and we started making plans then, and when the Alice Cooper tour was over, I went home for Christmas, and beginning of January, I was in Los Angeles at Eric's house, going through his gear. We went to the NAMM show together. He introduced me as his tech to Pearl and Zildjian and all his endorsers, and from there on, I just, you know, had the best gig of my life. I mean, one of many good gigs, but I was, you know, huge Kiss fan, as most of us were as kids. So that was huge to me.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I used to sit in my bedroom, Kiss Alive 2 playing, and I had the gatefold record open, and I'm reading the road crew credits. I used to have the road crew credits memorized and used to think, man, this is one of my all-time favorite, and it's hokey-sounding stories. I remember I was 14 holding Kiss Alive 2, thinking to myself, if there's a Kiss Alive 3, it would be so awesome to be on it. And 15 years later, there came Kiss Alive 3, and there I was on it. So,
whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a full circle deal for me, and it kind of hit. So that was a cool thing. I'm very fortunate for that and very thankful to Eric for that.
So how long were you you were with them for how long?
I started in 92. I did the club tour. Then I did the Revenge Arena tour. 93, I don't think they worked and I did other things. 94, I was out with STP and I believe all they did was South America. 95, in the beginning of winter, January, February-ish, we did Japan and Australia. And then that summer we did the convention tour. And I was Gene's bass tech and Eric's drum tech. Plus, I used to put up some of the exhibits. I did that whole tour. And then I did a month of building sets for the reunion tour as a set carpenter, special effects guy. And then after that, I was back out on Alice Cooper. So 92 to mid-96.
You know, one thing you forgot to mention that's totally cool, Ken actually teched for the Unplugged show for Peter, Eric, and Gene.
Yep, I did triple duty.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Wow, what was that like? I mean, when it was going on, was there any tension or anything? Or
there was a lot of no talking. They didn't. Well, there were two layers to it. First off, you know, we had been playing the acoustic set all summer long, but Gene was using an electric bass, a solid body. I had to get him an acoustic that, you know, had the punch of Gene Simmons, and he wanted to try a couple different ones every day through his amp at the shows. And I said, Gene, it's going to feed back. It's going to be a nightmare. Let me get like a dozen guitars. First day at rehearsal at SIR, we'll go through them. I know we're going to know it when we find it. So I was a little concerned about that, but we actually rounded up a bunch, and I knew the Kramer bass was going to be it because it punched and it was Gene. And he hit it three notes and he's like, this thing's awesome. He fiddled around with all the rest of them and went right back to it, and we were done. As far as tension, there really wasn't any. It was kind of funny, though, because we were set up, and I took care of Gene. I took care of Eric's drums, and there's another set of drums there that I'm supposed to pretend I don't see because they still haven't told us. Like, well, you know, maybe I might want to just start setting her up anyway, you know? It's kind of funny that way. And that's what I did. And Peter came in. He, you know, shook my hand. He was a sweetheart. He was very thankful for the help I gave him. And wonderful. Ace just kind of said hello and, you know, got into doing his thing. He had his tech with him. And no tension, no nothing. It was a smooth, smooth transition. Everybody, you know, just once it started, the magic was back. And
hell yeah.
I think it was a really, really cool thing. And I'm thankful for being there, being a part of it.
Right.
Always will be, you know. That was the first time since I was in high school that those four played together again. You know, that's right up there with my Live 3 story. I mean, you know.
Hell yeah, dude.
Those are, you know, the moments you can dream about. But so it went great, you know. And Peter and Ace both signed. I had one of the Kistery books. I had one of the early editions, and they both signed mine. And that was cool and thanked me. And, you know, it was a great experience. And it was one of those you knew was going to lead to something, even though everyone was saying no. So it was a cool thing.
Oh, yeah, it was. So, you were actually there for the rehearsals for Unplugged when Ace and Peter came in to rehearse with Kiss, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was.
Man, see, that's totally rad.
There's some YouTube videos out there that I think one of their wives took the shots of the band coming in. And I have a little, for my road crew book, a little thing people pulled, a buddy pulled video off the web for me and used some of that footage. So if you look for like Ken Barr Guitar Tech or something, road crew, my little video will come up and there's some pieces of that in there that you'll see, like Gene playing different basses and that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
But yeah, it was a great experience, especially once I got Gene locked in with a bass that I knew was going to work. That was it. That was my only stress point. And once that was done, I knew everything else would fall into place. Yeah, it was a lot of work, but you know, when it's like a dream moment, you don't really think of it as work, you know.
Sure. Let me ask you this because I want to make sure everybody knows before we get too deep in the show. Where can people go to take a look at your books and purchase them?
I have a page on Amazon. The Road Crew book and anything else I've written is on Amazon, is on Kindle. I also have an Audible version of We Are the Road Crew, audible.com, and on Amazon. Everything's available online. You just Ken Barr Road Crew will bring you everything.
Right on.
Awesome. If you have not purchased this book yet or any of his books, go get them. I've already been telling my girlfriend I got to jump on this. I'm into three different books right now. So it's like I have this really bad habit of starting one and putting one down and picking up another one and starting it. And then it's really a nightmare. But I'm excited because, like I said, the stories in your book aren't just about Kiss. You know, like I said, I used to love STP, and who doesn't love Alice Cooper?
Or Debbie Gibson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Debbie Gibson, he worked with Debbie Gibson too. I think that's cool.
That was my big break in the business was the Gibson family.
Right.
The now, Gibson family. Explain that.
Well, when I had a regular day job, I was doing bar gigs at night and just getting exhausted because you literally don't sleep. You know, I was a heavy metal guitar tech, and a guy I knew was working for the drummer. Debbie at this point was in high school with a top 10 hit, and she wanted to finish high school, so we would do gigs Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, be at home Monday morning in time to go to work. So I took the gig because a buddy of mine was leaving to go do a real tour, and he asked if I wanted it, and I said sure, you never know. So at that point, Debbie's mom took care of the day-to-day stuff. She was the manager plus the road manager. Debbie's grandma wrote the checks in the basement. I mean, we would go to the house and get our paychecks back then. You know, this was weekend warrior work. And the family always treated me great. And to this day, I still talk to them. So when I say the Gibson family, they really were like a family. They gave me my first break, and I'll always be thankful. You know, I went from working bars on my nights off to a tour bus and of the fattest paycheck I'd ever seen at that point. And I never had to have a day job again until, you know, I decided to leave the road some years later.
Wow, that is amazing. I had no idea that she was still in high school as well.
Yeah. She is the youngest person to write, perform, and produce a number one hit. She was 17, and her song Foolish Beat went to number one.
Yeah.
I remember that. I was in high school at the time.
Yep. I remember when it hit number one. It was huge. So, yeah. That was my big break, and I have always been thankful.
All right. So you do the Debbie Gibson thing, and at that point, you're like, holy crap, I've hit the pot of gold because I'm with a top 10 artist right out of the gate.
Yep.
Who did you go with? Who was your next artist?
I knew right away that not only doing a good job, but networking and looking for my next job was the only way I was going to survive. And that's exactly what I did. And our sound guy, Steve Botting, knew the guys from Air Supply were looking for a crew. And that was actually my next gig, drums and keyboards for Air Supply. And I managed to pick that up like 2 weeks after the Gibson tour ended. And that carried me right through till Christmas.
I'm not going to lie. I've listened to tons of Air Supply in my lifetime.
Well, you know what? When I was in high school, I had an AM radio, if anybody even knows what those are anymore.
Yeah.
And the radio stations played like 5 songs, and that was it. And it seemed like every time I was parked behind the high school with some girl classmate, All Out of Love would always come on at the critical moment.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
Yep, I always used to tell the guys that when they play that song, I get romantic feelings. They had to be careful. But those guys were great, too. They treated me great. They were rock stars. We played 30,000-seat stadiums in China.
Wow.
That was culture shock for me. I'd never been to the Philippines before. South America was just insane. And we did the States, and we did dinner theaters, and those were fun. And everything was just low-key and fun, and it was just another great tour, you know? Stories like, here's a quick one. We went to leave the Philippines, and we were at the airport, and the promoter's there, and he said, we may have an issue. The air controllers might go on strike, and if they do, the military is going to take over the airport, and nothing's going to come and go. So we're like, all right, well, let's wait and see what happens. And then a little while later, he said, they just went on strike, and the military's on their way. So now what? Well, let me see what I can do. They flew out 4 planes with no air controllers, and we grabbed the last one and got the hell out of there.
Wow.
No air. Just jump and go, hope for the best, and that's exactly how it went. It was crazy, but like I said, the Air Supply guys were just awesome. Another great experience. A far cry from all those years of doing the guitars in the heavy metal bands, but, you never know where your career is going to take you either.
Yeah, you follow the money.
Yeah, and the opportunities.
And yeah, absolutely. That's how it works, And it just kept getting bigger and bigger for you.
It did, because after that, I was home for the holidays, which typically most tours do. Everything kind of wraps up by end of November, beginning of December, and then in the February, I had my next tour. I already had lined up. The same guy that got me the Air Supply tour got me the Bangles, and I had the Bangles lined up for February, so I had like a month off, and I was out on another good-sized tour working for Mickey, the bass player, and doing keyboards.
Man, that's really
so cool. Far, everybody you've been with, I love.
You know what? The Bangles were awesome, too.
Hell yeah, they were.
Mickey was a metalhead, so we would like trade tapes and stuff and listen to the same shit. She was dating Ronnie, the guitar player from Kix at the time. And
another band I love.
See, it just keeps on going. I didn't work for Kix, but it was a cool thing. And that rolled into, by the summertime of 89, Debbie Gibson was out doing a bigger tour, and I was out on that. And that led into my friend Al Petrelli getting the Alice Cooper gig. And then I went literally from Debbie Gibson to Alice Cooper. I didn't even stop at home. I had to just fly straight out. And then that's when things really started rolling into high gear.
Wow.
Every once in a while I tell the story about how the Bangles played my high school.
Yeah.
When their album was really, when they were like, I mean, at one point the Bangles were one of the biggest bands in the world. They had multiple songs on MTV and stuff like that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They did a contest in Atlanta where all the high schools got to like send in little cards and vote for their own school to get the Bangles. And sure enough, man, it would have been crazy if you'd have been like, dude, I was there.
Well, what year was that?
Well, that was probably 86. So okay,
that's before I was with him in 89. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe it was later than that. But you know, I know "Walk Like an Egyptian" and all that was out. Yeah. That was more that's the early stuff, right?
That's the record before the one I did. Okay. I did, what was they had "Be With You" was one. Oh, "Eternal Flame" was the big hit off of the record I toured with them on.
Right on.
Oh, still cool.
So
let me
ask you this. I just got to know. So did you get to like hang out with Susanna?
Oh my God. Susanna Hoffs.
Honestly, you guys, one of the God's honest truth, I really had a thing for Mickey, even though she was dating somebody.
Yeah.
She was like the total rock girlfriend. I mean, she was a metalhead. She could play. And you know, if I could have had my pick, that would have been Mickey back then.
I hear you.
Wow.
Damn, I get Susanna.
She was cute, too. But, yeah, Susanna Hoffs. Woo! Anyway,
Susanna was so tiny, though. I would have been afraid of breaking her. I mean, she was
what are you saying, Ken?
She was really tiny.
Hi, it's Gene Simmons. You're listening to Podcast Rock City, but you knew that.
All right. So let's move forward. So you're on the road with Kiss. People out there that are listening to this show right now, you know, we got to give them some Kiss stories. So we always hear about Eric Singer being funny. Is it true, or is this just, you know?
Eric is like a combination of the little nipping chihuahua and the Energizer bunny. Yeah. He's always pulling shit, always doing stuff, and he's just fucking hilarious. I mean, he'd just be screwing around in the middle of a song, or you know, you think he'd be so serious up there, but it's not. You know, there was one or two nights where he had to lean over to point out some fat chick in the audience to me, and he missed starting the song. And he's like, oh, well, and he just catch right back up. But yeah, Eric, he's a sweetheart, though. One thing, I mentioned when I ran through my times with Kiss, and there were times like in South America when I wasn't available. He always held that gig open for me. There were a lot of good drum techs out there that were trying to get the gig to try and snatch it away. And he had a buddy of his cover drum tech work when I couldn't do it so that no one else would get the gig. And, you know, you don't see that often enough. And I appreciate that as well. But as far as Eric, though, I mean, you know, you've seen the videos. I mean, I saw one of them in makeup leaving the gig, and there's Eric with his bare ass pressed up against the van window, you know, that kind of shit. I mean, he's on fire all the time, but he's great at what he does, and he loves what he does. So he's having the time of his life, and he's like the little nipping chihuahua that just they're in rehearsals, and they were playing Parasite, and they were talking time, they were talking, you know, count, and Gene goes, we don't count in this band. And Eric turned right to him, didn't miss a beat, and goes, you count your money. And I'm like,
oh.
And I'm like, you know, cringing at that, thinking, oh, no. And Eric just right back into the song, couldn't have cared less. So
yeah, the one thing about Eric, when you watch the videos, is I don't think he fears Gene at all.
No. Oh, he does not. No, he has no filter, no fear, and I think that's one of the wonderful things about him. Gene can be intimidating. I was intimidated quite a bit when I first started, but you get used to him, you know. Eric just doesn't have that fear. He just, you know, he is himself, and, you know, love him or not, that's it. I mean, you get what you get, and that's an honesty you don't get a lot, and that's one of the things I love about Eric. So, no, he doesn't fear Gene at all.
That's cool. What was it like the first time when you met Paul?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you the my first day going to rehearsal. Eric picked me up at the airport, and we drove over to rehearsal, and I'm standing outside like, you know, like King Tut and Jesus and Elvis are in there, and I'm just thinking to myself, my life is never going to be the same after this day. I know it. And because I really was a big Kiss fan as a kid. You know, not that I'm not now. Of course, I still am. But I go inside, and Paul gets right up, and Eric says, Paul, this is Ken, my drum tech. Paul puts his hand out, shakes my hand, says, hi, I'm Paul. Nice to meet you. Gene's over on the couch. you know, talking to somebody, telling them the history of the fucking Rubik's Cube or some shit.
That's so awesome. It's so true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Forever the teacher. And walk up to him. And Eric says, "Hey, Gene, this is Kenny, my drum tech." Gene just looks me deadpan in the face and he goes, "Why?" I had nothing. I was tongue-tied. I just shrugged my shoulders and walked away over to the drum kit because I didn't know what the fuck to say. And I think it was about 2 days before I really could kind of figure out a way to kind of wedge back in and have some kind of a conversation. Because once you get to know Gene and get past the persona, he's a goof. You know, we're both old Marvel Comics guys, and once we start talking Marvel Comics, it's like an hour would go by, and you're like, oh, fuck, I gotta go. It's just that persona is real hard to get past. You know, at least it was for me. It took a little bit. But that was it. You know, I'd already met Bruce at a gig or something somewhere, so that was really my first day. Gary Corbett, the keyboard player, I don't know if you guys knew this, he actually did the 1989 Debbie Gibson tour, and that's where I met him. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we did that tour together. So, you know, that was like at least one other familiar face, which was wonderful. Excuse me. So, yeah, that was day one with Kiss. And I was excited when it was over. I was glad when it was over. You know, it's kind of like that first time you have sex. It was fun, but you're just glad it's over. And now I can get, you know, move forward and get better at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let me ask you this. You're still tight with Eric once Unplugged happened, and then they decided to, you know, do the full reunion. Did Eric talk to you about it at all?
We never really talked about it, but the thing to remember is, you know, the first time Peter came up with the band was at Eric's urging.
Yeah, at the LA convention, right? You were there for that too, right?
I was there for that. I was there for all of it.
Yeah.
And Eric, I think Eric's a professional. You know, of course it sucks losing your gig. Of course it does. But we're all grown-ups. He's a great player. He was not out of work long. You know, that once work got out. And I'm sure he knew that there'd be a home for him there again one day in whatever capacity. Whether I used to ask him, you know, about would he come up with his own makeup. And whether it was his own or wearing Peter's, I think he knew eventually there would be a spot there. And like I said, he certainly didn't hurt for work in the interim between Alice Cooper, Brian May, and a lot of the other cool things he did.
Right.
He invited me to do the Nelson Mandela concert in South Africa, and I just couldn't get away from what I was doing. That broke my heart because I would have loved to have done that.
Yeah.
That was just an incredible. If you guys haven't seen it, it's available on DVD. But I'm sure, you know, it sucks losing a gig, but we're all grown-ups, you know. He'd lost other gigs. We've all lost gigs one way or another. Right. It's a part of it. And, you know, nothing's forever. There's no guarantee. So Eric's always been real practical, you know. I mean, maybe he goes home and he's bummed out, maybe, but he's just always been real practical, real professional, and guy that good's not going to stay out of work long. And, you know, he's always been a big fan of the Kiss fans, so whether he's in the band or out, he's still always going to be involved there too.
Right.
And if this next big thing comes up, you know, maybe they'll get together and do a one and done or a couple of shows. Who knows? But Eric, you know, I'm sure will still be there if they need him.
If they did do something with Ace, I don't know. Eric seems like the better. I don't know. I have this. I'm sure we all do, where we have this thing where it sounds so cool to have Peter back in the band, but Eric is so amazing.
No, oh yeah, man. Absolutely.
You can't put Peter back in there, man.
It wouldn't be the same.
No, it definitely
he's
wouldn't.
He's too
be.
Old now, man. He just, you know, he's like what 70? What?
He's 70. And it's not like, I mean, it's just that, you know, everybody has these conversations. They're all, of course, always hypothetical, but it's, you know, it's just the playing isn't what we've now been used to for how long has Eric been back in the band, you know?
Long time.
Yeah. You know, so it's, you know, just one of those things. So let me ask you this, because I want to hear, you know, what was it like working with Alice Cooper?
Well, Alice was another one of my heroes. My second record I ever got was Killers.
Nice.
And I've been listening to Halo of Flies, you know, forever. I love that song. Meeting him again was scary. An old friend of mine from Long Island, Al Petrelli, got the gig, brought me. I'd been working with Al in the clubs for years, and it was great. It was the Trash Tour, so Alice was back on top, you know, playing good venues. It was a world tour, so we did Australia, we did Japan, we did Europe. And it was a great experience. The band and crew were all about the same age, give or take a couple years. So day off or a show day, it didn't matter because we were all hanging out all the time. Even at one point, we got Danger was our opening act. And those were a bunch of old Long Island cronies, and their crew were old cronies. So it was the family got bigger. And it was an awesome time. And the Alice Cooper organization was always good, and it was a great experience for me. That's why I was fortunate enough to go back a few times. And as far as Alice, as road crews can get into some shenanigans here and there, and sometimes, let's face it, we fuck up. And as long as you didn't hurt anybody and damages were paid, the coop was like, I can't do it anymore. So at least somebody.
Right.
So there was one night in Chicago. We all got blindly drunk, and I don't know how, but somehow the adjoining door to my room, to the drum tech's room, got kicked in. And the next morning I called and I asked if they had a price sheet for that. I wanted to know how much it was, and they're like, price sheet for a door? So security came up, the maintenance workers came up, they wanted to call the cops. So they all go into the drum tech's room. He's passed out. I just closed the door and left him in there. So he woke up to like six men with tools in his bedroom. He wasn't happy about that. End result, $200, and we're never going to let you stay in this hotel again type thing, which is fine. But our other guitar tech, Batty, Kevin Walsh is his name, Batty, he got found out in the – he broke it into the kitchen. He was barefoot. And only wearing jeans, and he was making himself a cheese and onion sandwich at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And they just were freaking out that he wasn't wearing a shirt. The knife he was brandishing didn't seem to bother them, or the fact that he was stealing food. But, he was shirtless. So, but there was some other shenanigans this particular night. So when the tour manager was checking out, clearing all the rooms, he saw the security report, and we took up like 2 pages of it. Just with all the... So he gets photocopies to get us all in trouble, and he goes running out to the bus to show Alice, and Alice just starts laughing. He said, well, I can't do it anymore. At least they can.
Right.
Nice.
Been there, done that. There's nothing he hasn't done. I mean...
Right.
No, that's true.
The guy drank with Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix. He partied with Groucho Marx and Bob Hope and Frank Sinatra. Yeah. Lord knows what he's done. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger, so... And the STP guys, that was an interesting tour. It was hard at times with Scott. Everyone became family, and it breaks my heart how things went. But with Scott, when he passed away, I posted something, and I said he was one of the most amazing, talented and dangerous frontman I've ever seen in my life. And he was a force to be reckoned with. He was more than a voice. He was more than a guy on stage. He had that audience in the palm of his hand, and he could get that place to erupt into a riot like it was nothing, or give you the best show you'd ever seen in your life. We would do gigs, and there were professional musicians that would go to the band at the end of the night and go, you're not fooling anybody, saying that the band were using tracks and recorded tracks. And like, it was all them. Those guys, when they were on, there was nobody could touch them. And, Scott was, like I said, it was just magic. It was just one of those special people, one of those special talents. And, I still can't believe he's gone. And, he had deteriorated over the years, and that was sad to see. But we did this one gig at the Beacon Theater in New York City, and it was for radio station winners and all that. And our equipment was so wide that you couldn't walk from the front of the stage to the back. We had to move cabinets to let the band get through because there was just no spot. Well, Scott disappeared before the show, and he shows up on time to start the show. He had a t-shirt tied around his waist as his underpants, and a black stripe painted across his eyes like a turn of the century French hooker, like a wide black, like a raccoon mask almost. And no one knows what the fuck to make of that. And, you know, you can tell by his demeanor he was high. And all of a sudden, you know, we're a few songs in, and this big guy jumps on stage, and our rigger runs out and grabs him because he was a pretty big guy. And Scott shook his head, and he goes, "No, bring him to me." And center stage, Scott grabs this guy and lays a lip lock on him that lasted about 20 seconds. And I think the band stopped, the crew stopped. I think the whole audience was just like, "What the fuck?"
I dated a girl here in Atlanta that was Brendan O'Brien's. Mm-hmm. I dated a girl whose roommate was Brendan O'Brien's, I guess, secretary or associate. You know, they worked together, and she told me that when they were in Atlanta recording a record, they said that he was pretty rough.
Oh, yeah. Well, they would all live together, and you know, when Brendan was doing the record, they'd all stay at the house, and I think that's great, but I've seen footage of them, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, and Dean DeLeo's walking around in a tutu, you know, ballerina's outfit. It's like, I don't know what's going on there, but I'm glad I'm not there. So, but, you know, the amazing thing is those sessions at Brendan's house, you know, like 3 weeks at Brendan's house, and they walked off with Tiny Music, you know?
Right, and, right.
Brilliant records recorded in 3 weeks, you know, and when I first came on board, it was the Purple record was about to be released, and they were already had top 10 hits, and they were already heading out on a headlining tour, you know, and they didn't have near the road crew, near the experienced road crew. They still had their buddies that did the clubs the first tour they did. So, you know, I went out there and was kind of dropped into it, and it was just an amazing experience. And that Purple record, you know, I'm listening to it, and they said that they'd play, that they'd write and record the song, give Scott a tape, and the next day he'd come in with like the lyrics to 3 songs. It's like, holy shit, you know, this stuff is good, it's incredible, and he's just blasting it out like it's nothing. So there really was a lot there. There was a chemistry and a magic, and I think that the Eric Kretz, the drummer, Robert and Dean, I don't think they realized how special it was until they tried to do another band. You know, they got a singer named Dave Coots, and they released a record as Talk Show. And we went out fall of 97, I think it was, opened for Foo Fighters for a few weeks and then opened for Aerosmith for a few weeks. Dave was a great singer, but zero presence out there, and they ended up scrapping the project, you know. Hmm. Record's great, but there was a big zero center stage, and he had the biggest shoes to fill of anybody, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. For all you guys out there that don't know, you can hear Ken coughing. He is fighting a cold. You're just getting over it, right?
Yeah, it's been the cough more than anything has been lingering. It's just been
I saw on your Facebook.
Yeah, I've been dealing with it. I've been, you know, laying low, taking the medicine, drinking juice, you know, eating salad, and it's just like, fuck, I can't. So,
I'm right there with you, brother.
Oh yeah, we've all been talking about it. So let's before we get out of here, let's do a couple of things. Let's talk a little more Kiss, because you being a Kiss fan and having the opportunity to work with them, first of all, that's epic for any Kiss fan would love that. You know?
Absolutely.
A couple of things I have to ask you. Who's your favorite member?
Well, I'm going to be real correct here, because in my heart, each band member brings something different. And Ace was always, as a kid, Ace was always my favorite because of the guitar parts. And the solo to Shock Me is just insane.
Amen.
But then again, Gene Simmons is the monster and all the shit that he does. So, and the Breathing Fire and all that stuff, and Dr. Love. And then Paul Stanley, you know, there's just a, I don't really, I guess the point being is I don't really have a favorite member. I have different things that I respect in each of them, you know.
Okay.
One of my favorite songs is Hooligan, the way Peter sings it, you know. And some of the more tribal sounds of his early drum parts I really dig. And so, I mean, I guess that's kind of a cop-out of an answer, but every guy brings something different that I respect the hell out of. But, I mean, if I was going to be held as a teenager, Ace Frehley, hands down. Now, with the retrospect and hindsight, I see something different in each member that I really, truly respect. So it's the whole package.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. That's awesome. What about, what was your favorite record? Or what is your favorite record that they did?
My favorite record, I think, of all time is Kiss Alive. That showed, that was the rawness. That was the power. You know, that record is nothing but raw. I love Alive 2. I love a lot of the records. And, of course, Alive 3 is close to my heart because my name is on it. But the record that got me into rock and roll, period, was Kiss Alive. Oh, and yeah. I can remember, you know, 100,000 years when Paul Stanley's got the audience going, "Do you feel all right?" I still, the hair on my arms goes up. I mean, I've been listening to that song for 30-some-odd years now. And when I hear that whole interaction, that back and forth with the audience, I get chills every time still to this day.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's so cool. When was the first time you saw them live?
79, Madison Square Garden. And I stood, I knew where the limos were coming, and I thought that if I stood there, I think I was 14 maybe, and if I thought, I tried getting pictures with my little Kodak Instamatic through the driver's windshield. So I held up each limousine by not getting out of the way. I mean, it could have been the caterer's limousine. I don't know. I don't know if it's or not, but I cut school that day. I took the train in at 8 o'clock in the morning and hung outside the garden from like 10 a.m. on with a bunch of Kiss fans, and the whole day was an experience. And I got pictures with, you know, people dressed as Kiss, and it was just going to see Kiss your first time, especially back in the day. There was nothing like it. And when those guys rose out of the floor, I about lost it. And then when Gene flew up into the truss for God of Thunder, holy God. Beavis and Butthead, they got nothing on me. I was slack talking. Like, oh my fucking God, I can't believe I never have to see another thing the rest of my life because I've seen it all.
Yeah, that is awesome. That's awesome.
That's really cool. It was huge.
And what now, all right, so that was the first time you saw them. When was the last time you saw them?
The last time they were through Orlando. I always go, even if it's just to say hello for a little while, a year or two ago here in Orlando.
Oh, cool.
I've stayed in touch with Eric and I have been friends forever. And there's a couple guys on the crew I'm still tight with. So I still go. And if I don't have time to stay for the show, I won't even ask for tickets. I'll just go and say hello and do my thing. But I try to stay for the show if it's at all possible. And I'm fortunate, like I said, you know, Kiss is a family, I think. I've never given it a second thought about being able to go and see them, you know. So, you know, it's usually just a phone call away, and, you know, they're good people, you know. And there's a lot of people, like I said, still there that I've known forever. So, yeah, I'll always go.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I like what he said there, I'll always go. That's how I feel. I know Jody feels the same way. You know, it's like, you know, there are people out there that I know that you know, obviously never roadied for the band, but, you know, they were Kiss fans, and now they're kind of turned off or whatever. But I don't know. I don't feel that way. I always felt like going to a Kiss show was my family.
Yeah. And I think that for people like us, you know, I pursue a career. You guys are doing what you do. And it's all out of respect and love for something that touched us early in our lives. It hit that one button. It was like, you know, I was looking for something in my life, even as a kid, and I have always been thankful of the whole Kiss thing because that gave me the focus. You know, I wanted to be a guitar player, and I realized I wasn't very good, and I soon realized, well, there's other opportunities, and that just opened up a whole world for me. And there's one other thing, you know, before we run out of time, I'd like to throw out, this is another, it can show you how Kiss can touch you. In the very early 80s, I was at a really hard time in my life. I, you know, rock bottom, factory job that was going nowhere, car broke down. Basically, I was fucked. with nothing. And there was a song off their record, The Elder, called I. And I used to be in my box cutting, little corner, making stuff, whatever at my job, not making enough money to survive. And I would sing those fucking words again and again to myself. I believe in me. And as hokey as that sounds, that's what got me through that rough time. And I have always been thankful for that,
That's cool.
Super cool.
When I was standing there at the factory, like I said, there's nothing wrong with factory work, but I wasn't making enough to survive, and I was slowly circling the drain. And I knew I could do better. I knew there was going to be a point where things were going to turn around. And singing that song to myself, just that got me through that little dark spot where things really were bad and things start to pick up. And every once in a while, that song will still pop in my head. No matter how old you are or where you go, you're going to have a rough time here and there. Well, I have found in my adult life, that song is what's going to pop in my head when things start to circle the drain again. And it's like, I believe in me. I can, I sit here in my house with looking at my gold and platinum records that the guys in Kiss were gracious enough to give me. And that reinforces it. And it's like, I never could have dreamed that, Just like, little Gene Klein could never have dreamed of being the monster and being a superhero, literally. For me to have Kiss gold or platinum, are you kidding me? That could not. And, I sit here looking at 14 of them, and it's like, yeah, I do believe in me. And that's what happens when you believe and you never let go, So I know that sounds hokey, but it
doesn't really sound hokey, Ken. It doesn't at all. It's the way every book that you read where somebody is down in the dumps,
Yeah.
It's always, that's the way it works. So to me, it doesn't sound hokey at all. To me, it sounds exactly like, all the successful stories that you hear. Where somebody's like, I was on my last dollar, my last piece of bread. I knew I could do better. Boom. And then I figured it out. I think it's cool, man. I'm really happy that happened for you.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. So before we go, let's tell everybody again, Ken, you got your hand dipped in all kinds of things. Where can they go to see your movies?
Ken Barr Films on YouTube. Everything's there. Like I said, I'll be building a web. I want to build a Ken Barr website that's got subcategories, like one side for books, one side for movies. But for now, just go to YouTube, Ken Barr Films, and there's a bunch there. Share them, like them. Hopefully people will dig them. And Ken Barr Films YouTube.
And then the books are on Amazon. And how many books have you written now?
I think 9 with this last Christmas book. I know it sounds ridiculous. I lose track myself. I think the Christmas book put me at 9. A lot of them are smaller books and, different stuff, different topics, but everything's on Amazon, all on one nice, neat page. And then, again, that'll all go over to the website once I migrate all that over. So it's on the big screen, whatever. I'm losing words.
It's okay.
My vocabulary is running out. I got to put another quarter in.
Yes, I hear you. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on with us. We totally appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Anytime. Yeah. Have me again. Have me on that Wednesday night thing, too.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. We'll have you on the radio show very soon.
Podcast Rock City. Yes!
Anyway, thank you very much for listening, you guys. Ken, you've been awesome. Like I said, we appreciate any time we could get on here and hear some cool rock and roll stories, Kiss stories, STP stories. It's all connected. STP, big Kiss fans. Kiss, big Alice Cooper fans. See how that all ties in?
Mm-hmm.
It really does. Anyway, thank you guys for listening out there. Joe, do you have anything to add?
I would just have to add, as always, man, thanks for listening, you guys. And Ken, thanks for coming on with us, man. It's good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Thank you. Thank you. Look forward to doing it again.
Absolutely. And you guys know what I'm going to say. We listen to tons of Kiss podcasts, and we love those Kiss podcasts. And we play all their commercials after this show, and you're going to hear them in 3, 2, 1. Peace.
You wanted the best, you got the best. And if you want the hottest show on Monco Radio, join us in the Kiss Room. The Kiss Room is a monthly radio broadcast celebrating the hottest band in the world. Kiss! It's your place for all things Kiss and some... For broadcast dates and all information, go to thekissroom.com. The Kiss Room broadcasts live and worldwide on Monco Radio, where music and minds meet.
Greetings from Jandel Kiss Army. Strange Ways Podcast is having a rock and roll party and you are invited. Right. Tune in and hang out with your Kiss Army bros where they celebrate and discuss the Gods of Thunder. Kiss. You can find the Earth versions on Podomatic, iTunes, Facebook, and Stitcher. Just Google us.
Yes.
Thanks for listening and remember to eat it like a piece of cake.
History Science Theater, the most civilized.
Yeah.
Oh, f-
oh, f-
me. Come on.
Respectful.
Just imagine G with like a washed-up bass. Boom, 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 boom.
And serious.
No, wait.
Excuse me, Bob. You're gonna come over and do my album?
Kiss podcast on the web. History Science Theater. We bust balls because we can.
All right, Kiss Army. Since 2007, you've been getting podcast, the Kiss audio fanzine for your ears.
That's right, it's your podcast. Every month, the podcast crew, along with the Kiss Room, brings you Kiss talk like no one else, whether it be roundtables, interviews with the band past and present, analysis, and great Kiss fun.
Hi, this is Ace Frehley, and you're listening to podcast.
Hi, this is Bruce Kulick, and you're listening to Podkist.
The Podkist, the Kiss audio fanzine for your ears.
Hey, everybody, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Chris.
And we're from the Decibel Geek Podcast, and if you love this...
then you'll love us.
That's right. Brand new episode every single Monday. You can find us on iTunes and at decibelgeek.com. And the best thing is, it's rock and roll, and it's always free.
Sitting around with time to kill. Ladies and gentlemen, do you like metal, punk rock, hardcore, and cracking jokes about being a fan? Yes? Then check out Music the Lifeblood, the podcast that goes deep into the core of being a fan with new music from badass bands, band and genre discussions, along with in-depth interviews from some of punk, metal, and hardcore's titans. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, Tumblr, and Facebook. Something old, something new, what are you listening to?
Music, the lifeblood.
Baby, you know it's only you and me. And as far as I'm concerned, that's all I need. A generation.